Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, March 27th. We have several items on our agenda today. We will take them in the order that the agenda is published. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3134.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. House Bill 3134 extends the definition of tourism promotion for the purpose of transient lodging taxation to include different or additional definitions, as in marketing and tourism special events and operation primarily. And just to have a background on all of the tourism and transient lodging tax, I included you in your background some of the historical background on all of these issues. It's both in the background part of House Bill 3134 and also a one-pager that is included in AULIS to give a detailed for each of the bills. Unless you want me to go through some of that?
Let's just start the material for 3134 only.
Okay. So, again, just House Bill 3134 primarily expands some of the allowable uses for the transient lodging tax on the local level, and you, most of the changes that you would see would be on your second page of the bill. These add operation of tourism generating special events, which basically makes the operation side rather than only the investment side an allowable expense of the transient lodging taxes.
Thank you. We have three people signed up to testify, and before that, let's hear from Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I'm the House Representative for District 5. Today is TLT morning at the House Revenue Committee, and I just wanted to offer a few general comments around not only this bill, but the bills to follow. This is the continuation of our efforts to really shore up and address some of the gaps in our transient lodging tax legislation that applies to both the state TLT as well as TLT programs that have been exercised in through opt-ins at the local levels. You will remember a couple of years ago, we passed legislation in 2017 that allows the state Department of Revenue to share information with local communities regarding their TLT collections. We also, at that point, authorized the state Department of Revenue to engage with local communities that wish to do so, so that the state could actually do the tax collections for local communities that opted in. And then in 2018, we passed a piece of legislation that addressed online vendors and specified that those vendors are responsible for collecting and remitting the local transient occupancy tax if they, in fact, also collect the cash that goes with that. So in the last year, we've been busy working on a lineup of bills that, again, address various holes. You're going to hear about them today. But what we're trying to do is really continue to advance the conversation to put into place some of the efforts that we started 2 years ago so that our TLT collections, both at the state and the local level, can be robust, can bring everyone in who's obligated to pay, and can ensure that the public programming that are supported by TLT, again, at both local and state levels, are have the revenue that they need to move forward. So I thank you for that, and you're going to be hearing about various proposals. Happy to answer any specific questions about those as we roll forward.
Thank you. Do you have any comments about this one bill, 3134?
This is a bill that would broaden the use of transient lodging tax at the local level. It's something that we've been discussing for a couple of years. There's a whole history that I think the representative from League of Cities may delve into that describes how we got to where we are today in terms of agreements between Lodging and Restaurant Association and the League of Cities that specifies the expenditures within TLTs. And this bill proposes to expand the definition of items that are supported by the part of the TLT that is obligated to be spent on tourism promotion.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Greshke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this whole discussion. I remember in ECDEV, I think we were both on that committee in 2017, there was a bill brought forward that expanded how these taxes could be used to repair city and municipality infrastructure. That's not what this does. This seems to just, it strikes marketing special events and festivals designed to attract tourists and replaces it with operating tourism, generating special events and sporting events. What's the distinction between those two phrases there? It's and maybe not prepared to say, but it's page 2, lines 5 and 6. It strikes line 5 and adds line 6. Is it to better define how that money can be used? I see it adds sporting events instead of special events. Instead of festivals, it says tourism gathering. So,
Chair Nathanson, Rep. Reschke, you're a little bit more in the weeds than I'm prepared
okay.
to go right
All
now.
All right, that's fine.
But in general, Wendy Johnson from the League of Cities will be prepared to go into the weeds. But in
sure.
general, we are trying to capture those expenses of events like police protection, which are okay. which we could legitimately consider to be a requirement in order to put on a special event that draws people into a city, and to make sure that we can actually use those proceeds to pay for those kind of fundamental expenditures.
And just to follow up, so it's striking the word marketing a special event to operating tourism generating, so that would fit in your description there. Operating would include hiring security forces
That's,
or something like that to run an event.
Chair Nathanson, Rep. Reschke, that is the intent.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll join you.
Let's hear from Wendy Johnson and Eric Kanzler.
Members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson, here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities, here to testify in support of House Bill 3134. As was mentioned, since 2003, we've had a state tax, and when that state tax passed, the statute that restricts governments use their money also passed. It was sort of a, okay, we will do a new state tax, but we're going to make sure that how locals were spending their money is maintained while we start this new state tourism commission and start having a state focus on promotion. Back in 2003, Oregon really was towards the bottom of what we spent on tourism promotion. It was handled entirely by locals. And then when that state tax passed and the tourism commission was created, Travel Oregon, we started having the state focus on promotion as well. That was a really, to be honest, a brutal battle in that 2003 session. It went on from the beginning of session till the end to create the state tax. And the battle was that locals did not want to be restricted going forward. And so the language that we have presently is not eloquent at all, and it's often fought about what those words mean. There's this 70-30 split. Basically, it said, okay, whatever you're doing in 2003, you must continue doing. And then if you do a new tax, And that's kind of why we have the winners and losers, cities and counties. Some cities and counties didn't impose a tax till very recently. Those folks are stuck at a 70-30 split. And that 70, they must use for either bucket A, which is tourism promotion, or bucket B, tourism facilities. Many communities have no facility, so they must use it, the money for promotion, on their restricted dollars. So this bill is about, well, what does that restricted bucket what's in that bucket. And tourism promotion, when you think about it, just sort of the English, you'd be like, well, anything you're doing to help promote tourism should fit in that bucket. But it doesn't. Right now, the language, and Representative Reschke mentioned it, it starts on the first page, line 30. It says, tourism promotion means any of the following activities. Advertising, and this is where we moved marketing. Marketing was deleted on page 2, but we've kept it so that they all parallel together. Advertising, marketing, publicizing, or distributing information for the purpose of attracting and welcoming tourists. So this is your basic ads and marketing bucket. So of course that's promotion is how it's defined. And then B and C are having, you know, strategic planning is also included in promotion. Operating agencies is included in promotion. And what we're adding new in the new D is it's not just the promotion and marketing, it's the actual events themselves. Those costs would be covered. So it says operating tourism, generating special events and sporting events. You may ask, well, why did you decide on that limited group? Because it would be nice to cover tourism costs all year. Well, that was a compromise, essentially, to the tourism industry of we won't have costs associated from tourists all year. We'll focus on those expensive events so that we can continue doing those events. And also because that's what the state tax can be used for. The state is required to use the state lodging tax for marketing and such is Travel Oregon's focus, but they can also use it on the same thing of tourism, special events, and sporting events. So we're just paralleling that so it's the same. Basically, we figured if the state can use it for those things, we should be able to use that. And it won't help a lot of, I mean, it's not going to be millions and millions of dollars for communities. It's literally letting us use the money that we're promoting for our event to be able to pay for the costs of that event. So we do intend for it to cover public safety. It would not be your FTE for a police officer, would only be the, or public safety officer, would be the overtime needed for that weekend event. It would be the, in Hood River, it would be the cost of having the rescue folks out on the water for that special event. It would be the porta potties and the tents that are needed for that special event that need to be purchased or rented. It's cleaning up before and after an event. So those costs. And when we discussed this measure with the Restaurant and Lodging Association, we acknowledged that our finance folks are going to have to be pretty diligent about making sure they line item so it will track to make sure that we hit the definition here, which is operating tourism special events. It can't be general items. So we feel like this is a very narrow expansion of the definition of promotion, but it will provide flexibility so that we can continue these important tourist events and festivals and such that happen all across our state. As you know, Measure 50 created winners and losers. The lodging tax also created winners and loser cities and counties. Some are very restricted because there's the first step, whatever you're using for promotion must be continued. Some cities and counties were at zero. Some were at 80 or 90. That's where they're frozen at. So this definition is very important for them as they go forward. But at least this is restricting it to only tourist events, the expansion. So it's very tied to the industry. And so we're still helping the industry and making sure we're addressing the shoulder season and the hot season when we're focused on events. So we hope that you can support that. We think it's a very modest ask. We're now ranked number 15 or so, or in the top 15 nationwide on what we spend towards promotion. Our communities are really frustrated that their public officials who need to spend the public dollars wisely. And some communities are just frankly being forced to spend more money on promotion than they know what to do with. That's not across every community. Some communities, there's not a lot of money and they will continue to spend it on promotion. But this is an ask of some of our communities. Just to give you the numbers, we went from a little over $60 million a year in revenues that were coming from the lodging tax for the local level. So now we're over 200 since 2003. So we're almost at four times, but our restrictions are still the same. And that adds up to millions of dollars. Lincoln City, for example, their property taxes and their lodging tax revenues are almost equal, and yet they're restricted on how they use them. So these are real dollars. And we're asking for flexibility. We could have asked, and we've considered changing the 70-30 split, trying to equal the playing field so it's reasonable everywhere, but that's undoing a whole lot of negotiation. Instead, we're trying to do a simpler focus on tourism and asking for some flexibility there. many of our communities are very frustrated with this bill that it doesn't go enough. They want more use for general fund, and their argument is this is a city tax or a county tax that they have needs and water expenses and fire and police and everything else, and promotion isn't at the top of their list right now as they look at their family budget. This is their crisis, and so they're very frustrated that the legislature has preempted them for 15 years, but we think this is a modest adjustment, especially many of these communities are dealing with housing shortages that are related to tourism, and they can't use any of that money there. So this would be one modest way to at least help them pay for the costs that are directly related to tourists. For that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Eric Kanzler here representing the city of Bend and supporting this and the remainder of the bills in this nice suite of bills. So it's no surprise to you to hear that the city of Bend is up here with a strong interest in tourism. We have a very healthy tourism economy. It's not one that is without challenges at times, and we do face limitations on, of course, how we can use our lodging tax dollars. One of the most important elements of our tourism economy are our events, and we have a mind-boggling array of different events, from the pole pedal paddle, Cascade Cycling Classic, festivals. We have a fest for every season. We have a festival for beer. It's just an endless list of things. And without these events succeeding, the tourism economy doesn't succeed. So what we like about this is it does enable us to address and pay for some of the pinch points on these events. Many of these events are operating on margins at times. If you lose it for 1 year, you might lose it for a long time. And so the way that this would allow us to use the restricted lodging tax dollars to help ensure that those events are strongly supported is of interest to us. Ms. Johnson said, it's not a lot of money that we're talking about. For Bend, we have an overall 10.4% lodging tax. 9% of that is prior to 2003. 1.4% of that is post-2003. So then you get into 70% of that and a small portion of that. And so it isn't a whole lot of money, but I don't think we need a whole lot of money for this purpose. And we have a very effective contract and relationship with Visit Bend, who handles all of our tourism and marketing for the city and does get into elements of recreating responsibly and covering a variety of things. So we feel that there's a dynamic there where we could make very good use of this slight change to flexibility. And for those reasons, we support the bill. Thank you.
Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm somewhat troubled by the page 2, line 6, operating tourism, generating special events and sporting events. I'm somewhat puzzled and troubled by sporting events, and I'm not sure that we should be spending these dollars to organize a sporting event. What do you have in mind? What was behind the conversation that led to that?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Finley, as I said, we just took the exact language from the state on what their coverage was. Personally, I think if you're going to meet the definition of tourism, you have to hit the definition of tourist, which is the 50 miles from home kind of a thing anyway. So events is inclusive. It still has to, because that tourism seems to go with both phrase, both special events and sporting events, so that phrase would go with it. So any event that is a tourist event is what we're intending to cover. If you're not happy with that, sporting events, I'm happy to strike it, but we're trying to be parallel. So just for statutory construction, that it's the same. But it's got to be a tourist event. It can't be the local basketball game that's not really tourist. It has to be, we're talking, I mean, when it was written for the state, obviously it was including the World Track Championships. So it was a very specific world event that we discussed at that time. But special events that are tourism generating are what we're focused on, those costs.
Thank you.
Representative Rush.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wendy, can you help me understand a little bit using a couple of examples? So Eugene's to host the 2020 Olympic trial team's track and field. How would this benefit the city of Eugene, or would it, in hosting that particular sporting event? Or I saw somebody just, Mr. Jarman just left the room. I was wondering about the Trailblazers. They have sporting events all the time. Is that considered a tourist event? in this regard and how they could use money to, quote, secure the facility for such an event. I'm just trying to understand some specific examples of how this change would apply.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Rushkey. Both the City of Eugene and the City of Portland have facilities, so they're not in such a quandary that many communities are. They can use their lodging tax dollars for tourism facilities, including their conference centers, which both communities have. So they regularly put their percentages towards the facilities. It's our other communities. But just to answer your question, yes, the City of Eugene could, and the restricted portion, it would be eligible to use. I mean, they're going to need additional public safety and city employees and trash cleanup and everything else. They would be able to use their local tax under the bill as written. Instead of just for promotion and promoting the event, they would be able to use it for their actual cost for the event.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Smith. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you both for being here. And I more want to do a follow-up comment to Representative Finley's question, which is, I just want to put in another good word for mimicking the language from the statewide, because as somebody who was here when we went through the change that was designed specifically to support this major international event going on that was planned for Eugene and the ability that, I know that language was very carefully crafted, and so I just want to echo that. I think it's very, I just want to call you out for duplicating that, because I think that's important. And I just want to give another example of a sporting event which might be counted as a tourist event, which is there is, among the many things in Bend, is they have something called the Bend Beer Chase, which is a one-day relay race. And yet it is a tourism event, and I have gone to Bend for that in a way that I would not have before. And that, I think technically it's a sporting event because it's a run, but it's clearly a tourist. It's clearly a tourist activity. And indeed, just like it sounds like, it is a relay race that has 12 legs, and they each start and end at a local brewery. So it's a really fun race. I'll just stop there.
Does anyone think?
Okay.
Yeah. Moderation in all things.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Rushkey.
Do you get a running while inebriated?
Is there a well-understood definition of sporting event? I'm assuming that a rodeo could be included as a sporting event, and I know that there is quite a bit of tourism associated with attending, drawing people from either around Oregon or even out of state to come to a rodeo. Kite flying at the coast. How does someone interpret what a sporting event is?
The members of the committee. I don't think there's a definition in the tourist chapter, so it would be the plain English. Oregon uses the third, Webster's third international, so I'm sure, as you said, rodeos, anything that's classified as sports under the common meaning would be inclusive. And kite events, perhaps not, but it would be a special event. The kite competition that's held in Lincoln City, for example, would have fit under the special events.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thanks.
Thank you.
Next, let's hear from Bill Perry.
Oh, I wonder what he's going to think about this.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. And I want to start off not only on this bill and the other bills we're going to be talking about later. I will say that I think we've had a very open dialogue with both the cities and the counties, and I appreciate the relationship. I think it's improved immensely. We are still currently opposed to this bill, and I'll kind of go into some of the specifics. I think the area that we've been touching on is really the main area that I'd like to address. So if things are related to an event today, some of the events that have been brought up, I do think there's lodging taxes being used for a lot of the things that came up in this committee. This language does not directly address where the state is. Like when you look at the portion of the law that we've been talking about, the sporting events and everything else, it's a little bit less problematic, but I mean, they added the term generating in the middle of that line. Where if you go to the current statute, what it talks about is if whether it's a sporting event or anything else, if it's got a substantial purpose of drawing in tourists, it applies. So the Kite Festival, all these different events, whether they're sporting events or not, they basically, you can use lodging tax dollars in those events today. Now, by adding the word generating, you know, everybody's got attorneys, as we all know well. It's an undefined term, and that's where some of the ambiguity comes in. Now, the next line is even kind of more problematic from our standpoint when you're talking about some of the things enhancing. Tourism industry is not defined, some of the enhancing. If you've got a convention center and you want to expand that convention center, you can do that under current law. As, you know, talking to DOJ and attorneys and everything else, because these are not current definitions, they're using separate definitions, they're undefined, and we don't know how it's going to expand the law. I mean, that's the concern, and that's kind of the rub with everybody, is I don't think anybody can tell you for certainty how this is going to change. Now, the reason why it's important, I think, is the previous speakers talked about there's $200 million in local lodging tax. I think this is the great way to try to frame this thing. Okay, now, if you think that $200 million is going towards tourism promotion, it's not. The biggest benefactor of that $200 million is general fund. It's not tourism promotion. The second biggest benefactor is tourism-related facilities, okay? Only 17 to 20%, depending on where we are today, is being of that $200 million is being spent on promotions now. And so when we talk about changing these definitions, all you're doing is eroding that less than 20%. You're not eroding the other benefactors. And so, you know, part of the frustration, well, and I'll say the city of Bend was up here. So just so you know, over 60% of the lodging tax in Bend goes to general fund. They spend, you know, a portion of it, like I think around 5%, he can correct me if I'm wrong, goes directly to public safety. So when you're talking about the local, you know, we're talking 70-30, but still the biggest benefactor in Bend is general fund. And so our argument is always, why are you going after the 30 to 35% from promotions when you're already taking 65% for general fund? You know, you continue to erode the smallest piece of this. Lincoln City came up. Lincoln City, I think it's 68% goes to general fund. Only 32% goes to tourism promotion, and part of that goes to tourism-related facilities. So once again, we're making it sound like 70% in these communities are being spent on promotion. They're not. And as we get into events, I will argue the events are very important. But remember, the events almost always happen in our peak season. So the more you spend on events, the less you're taking away, or the less money you're spending to recover from fire damage, from all these different things that are basically making it so we need to spread out and try to make sure that all our businesses, whether you're a gas station, restaurant, or a hotel, can try to improve their basically sales and keep their employees employed in the off season. So yes, we could concentrate more on events, but events almost always happen in the peak season. So the more emphasis you place on events, the less you're spending on where I think our industry and all your local businesses would say where you should be spending the money, and that's in the down times. And so this is a conversation that needs to be happening locally. I agree with that statement. Now, I don't agree with it needs to be coming out of the promotions, because almost all these places that are high traffic events, Coast, Bend, Ashland, we can go down those lists, most of the money is being spent on general fund. And most of the need for the local businesses is to be spent on off-season promotions. And so, you know, you can talk about some of the smaller counties or cities like, you know, Fossil or Wheeler. None of this matters to them because there's not enough money and they probably don't have a lodging tax. But in those communities with high lodging taxes today, City of Portland, any of them, they spend most of that money on general fund, and there is a need there to try to produce off-season revenue. And so, you know, I would say that we're very close on this bill, but if they stick to current definitions, it would be less problematic, because all of these are basically new definitions, which creates uncertainty. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for being here. But I'm a little flummoxed by your comments around events, because aren't events what communities do to actually drive people from out of the area to visit? Isn't that in Ashland, all of our emphasis has been on off-season events, and we have a whole lineup of things that start happening in November and go through February just for that, exactly that reason, to draw people to the community through culinary festival, independent film festival, special promotions, on and on. So I'm surprised you don't see that happening generally in other communities.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, no, I appreciate that. And I thought I said, and if I didn't, I will correct myself. No, events are very, very important. Uh-huh. You know, Shakespeare Festival, you know, I'm, you know, and you can look at some of these different things. They're vitally important to that community, and they need to be helped. But at the same token, when you look at if you're going to do what I think this bill does is it allows you to spend more money on things that I would, to make an editorial comment, I'd say kind of are around the outside of the event, because, like I said, the big festival in Albany, are they using tourism dollars to get porta potties inside the big country music event? I think they are. I'm not in that event, but that is directly related. It's inside. Now, the city of Albany might not be spending it, but the money is going to those events, and so they're. A lot of this stuff of the examples that's been used in this committee, I think, is already covered. Mm-hmm. The issue is, does this open it up outside of that? I believe it does. And so that's kind of the concern. No, but the events are very, very important. But I just don't want noted for the record, when you look at, you know, Shakespeare is a perfect example. It's huge for Ashland. I'm not arguing, but it's also, Ashland would probably be doing fine outside the Shakespeare Festival, because people would be coming to Ashland during that time frame. I'm not saying that it's not important, but, you know, the issue sometimes is how do we make sure that those buffer zones and areas are done? So did I answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you. Other questions?
I have one. Mr. Perry, you mentioned something, one of your final statements was something about if we would be able to stick to current definitions, mm-hmm. you'd be more comfortable. Can you point to which words and which line are problematic and where you think they're, you wish the words were different?
Yeah, and it's, Chair Nathanson, thanks for the question. I think when you go back to some of the traffic that has gone, like I said, on, I don't remember the numbers, but the one relating to sporting events, that word generating is new. If you basically said substantial, I think I'm trying to quote the statute from memory, substantial purpose of generating tourists or whatever the current statute is, that's the current definition. And so that word generating comes out and substantial purpose gets put back in. And the other one, I think in the line below it, is enhancing tourism industry is not defined in statute, and the enhancing on the, once again, I'm doing this from memory, but those are kind of those are new definitions. So as long as you're tying to current definitions of tourism-related facilities and substantial purpose of generating tourists, I mean, that's, but like I said, I would argue, I'm not sure the bill needs to happen, because I think you can do all those things today. And so I'm not really sure what, you know, in the examples that were given up here, I don't believe that those issues can't be addressed. I think a lot of the times when you get into the enhancing and everything else, and I'm not saying it's that intent, you get into the same debates we've always had. And I don't mean to peel off old wounds, but, you know, flower pots, benches, lamp posts, because, you know, people feel like that enhances the different things. So you start to open up definitions to things that we just don't believe are a good use of lodging tax dollars. So, I mean, that's kind of the, I think, the core of where the debate is happening. And I'm doing that from memory. I don't have it in front of me, but I think that at least gives you an idea.
Is it possible to put the bill up on the board so he can?
Sure.
Well, and trust me, you're asking a C average liverable arts major to still quote stat or be a legal defense.
Okay. But okay. Yeah.
Like I said, there are definitions in statute right now. And really the substantial purpose of generating tourism, I think, is the one that it's not right there. But that really gets into the crux of where, like I said, the generating is the new word, the tourism industry is not defined, and the enhancing, I think, where the substantial, basically, fight was over between the two parties.
Your memory was good. It matches what's displayed on the screen right now.
Yeah,
Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Bill. It seems like the salient issue there is really operating tourism special events. Now, I would agree with you that I think in many cases these expenditures are being picked up, but I don't see anything in the current statute that explicitly gives the localities permission to use the money in that way. And it would seem to me that it is a value for us to all agree that use of porta potties, the purchase of porta potties or the use of security detail is explicitly a part of the statute that defines how the money can be spent. If you see that someplace else, tell me where it is.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, and I can go back and look, but I would say from a philosophical standpoint, I do think this is important to frame. When you look at the current statute, basically when it talks about local governments, it talks about, I think it's a 10-year useful life. Once again, I'll figure out if that, because really I think what the intent was, and I'm not by any means trying to say I'm speaking for the legislature, was there's one thing that a local tourism, whether it's a DMO, a chamber, or a nonprofit like the Shakespeare Festival, the one thing that they can't do is they can't do bonding. So really what I think the intent was behind this was, when you look at what local governments do, they do bonding, they do different things, but if you want somebody to promote an event, that's not really the city's job or an operating, you know, and so they can contract with the city for police services around that. But that would be basically a nonprofit or a DMO or something else that actually organizes the event. Somebody else is operating the convention center. They, you know, they usually have contracts with different operation firms. And so, you know, the question is from a philosophical standpoint that you guys decide is, do you want the cities managing the events, which would be a different direction, or do you want cities to basically be the you have oversight, you get to decide who does the local promotions, and you get to do the bonding, but somebody else is actually organizing the porta potties, is basically trying to figure out what the security is around it. And it's a philosophical discussion, and it's a little bit different, but, you know, it's, I do think if you're saying I want the cities to start managing the events or something, it's just a different direction than we have in statute today. And that's, you know, that's maybe what this bill is trying to get at. But I don't really think the intent is to have the cities managing the operations of the event. I do think operations of event centers is allowable today, as long as everything is related directly to the event center as a tourism related, as a tourism center that's substantially used for generating tourism. That, you understand what I'm saying? Not asking you if you agree with me, I'm just saying, do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, thank you.
Thank you. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify on 3134. I don't see anyone waving their hand out there. So I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3134. I'm going to open a public hearing concurrently on the next four bills. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3135, 3136, 3137, 3138. That looks a lot like these concepts were delivered to Legislative Council and brought to the Chief Clerk at the same time. There might have been a plan here. I don't know if this is going to work, but as we start to open these, there are only two people signed up to testify on all four of these. So Wendy Johnson, Eric Kanzler, would you please start making your way forward? I would like to, though, talk about the bills one at a time to make sure we understand each one. And I understand there may be some overlap in the comments. But, Mr. Malik, would you please describe that first one for us, 3135?
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3135 is probably the shortest of all, and it has to deal primarily with the issue of allowing the Department of Revenue to acquire software, and that software to be able to sort of scrape the data for the transient lodging tax when it comes to the locals that are being collected by the Department of Revenue for those to be identified in local address, not only regional as it is today. However, this bill allows also for an appropriation to the Department of Revenue to get that money for acquiring the software. And I think in Section 3, you would find that the appropriation comes from the general fund, and it's not defined as how much. However, it allows for it to be done that way. So that's 3135.
Great, thank you. Ms. Johnson, Mr. Cancellor.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. Again, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. This is a short bill. It's really doing one thing. It would require the state to purchase software to scrape data regularly from the web to be able to check to see how we're doing on our collections of lodging taxes in the short-term rental area. As you know, we've definitely become a sharing economy in the last 10 years. That's where significant growth in lodging taxes is coming from, is people renting out homes or portions of homes or rooms or unique parts of their backyard or fields or just you name it, it's being rented out in the shared economy. That's not your typical business structure of how we've done rentals for lodging accommodations in the past, where a city or county can look at the hotel list and, you know, compare and figure out where to get the lodging tax revenues. This is a very different construct that's frankly hard to track. And then it's online, the number of third parties, we call them intermediaries by our statute, and that statute was improved in the 2018 session to cover the different ways an intermediary platform does their business. This still is difficult to track, and the new intermediaries come on all the time. So this bill would simply require the Department of Revenue to enter into a contract to get this software for the state. The reason we have the cities and counties care about this bill, it goes with the second, the next bill, 3136. We're hoping for the state to collect for locals as many as want to sign up, and that's modeled after the marijuana tax, where when you're collecting a tax from the same people, just a different tax rate, just the same taxpayers, on the marijuana tax, there's the state 17% and the local 3%. It makes sense to file once. The same construct would happen with lodging taxes. You'd be paying the state 1.8%, and you'd pay the locals that have signed up with DOR, and we'd have an agreement. That bill passed in the 2017 session. It's in ORS 305-620 that says DOR or a state agency can collect a local tax as long as the state recoups its cost. So if we entered into an IGA, we'd probably be paying a 2%, 3% type of fee to DOR to do that collection, but it's economies of scale. It's efficient. They can handle the liens. They can do the enforcement. It's better for the taxpayer and everything. So to make that system work and for our communities to feel comfortable and to make sure that we're actually collecting all taxes, we feel it's important to have some sort of mechanism to check. And this software concept is what we developed over the interim. This bill would require a couple of amendments. The first was one that Mr. Malik mentioned, that the bill on line 11 says that the funding for the software would be from the general fund. And we've discussed how that really should come from the state lodging tax funding rather than the general fund. There's a blank in line 11 This would be less than $200,000 that we would need. We're anticipating that we would only need the money for a year and a half of the biennium because the state needs an auditor to actually use the data and to be able to enforce. And there's a policy option package in this in the Ways and Means process to add an auditor for the Department of Revenue for the state lodging tax. And so we would need that person to be online before we would have the software start to be in use. So the blank would be around $200,000 or less. And lastly, the vendor we've been consulting with, Host Compliance, which is the largest vendor in the country and has many cities and larger areas across the state. That vendor has suggested we don't need specific address information at this point to do the state review, but to do local collection, we do need address level to make sure that the tax that goes to Lincoln City and not to Seaside. But that does require specific address level. But we're also just not sure as a state whether we've got all the money coming in from all of the properties. And so we're suggesting a pilot to do two municipalities. It could be a city and a county or two cities at the more expensive software level to do a spot check to see how we really are doing. So this bill would need to be amended to include that pilot provision as well. So those are the three amendments that we're suggesting. Again, this is really to make sure that we don't continue to have the honor system in Oregon that we know is easy to evade right now. And really make sure that we have an even playing field. We know the hotels are paying. We're just not sure all the short-term rentals are paying. This is not about revenue raising, and there is just a component to that, but it's about evening the playing field and making sure we're treating all establishments the same way. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on that bill.
Members of the committee, again, for the record, Eric Kanzler representing the city of Bend. I'll be exceedingly brief in my comments on this portion and perhaps the remainder of the portions of this public hearing. When we look at this suite of bills collectively, we see different things that are going to be of different value to different cities. The city of Bend is not one that's likely to utilize a state opportunity to do the collections. Then again, I couldn't rule it out. It might develop over time and prove to be a very efficient, very effective means of doing this. For now, we're likely to continue collecting at the local level, but we do face a lot of challenges in trying to collect from the short terms as opposed to the hotels. As Ms. Johnson has suggested, we actually have a short-term rental policy that includes a variety of different elements, including some limitations on short-term rentals, registrations on short-term rentals. We spend quite a bit of resources attempting to understand and track this component of our tourism economy and of our overnight accommodations. And our experience is that it's not easy to understand even what you ought to be collecting or to actually collect it once you understand what you ought to be collecting. So the main reason why we like this suite of bills above and beyond giving different cities and the state different tools is that really we do believe it will help with that short-term rental issue and lead to better collections and, again, equity and balance between those offering different types of units for overnight accommodations. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Reschke.
I don't have a question for these two, but I was wondering if Department of Revenue could come forward. I do have a question for them. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Garst, for coming forward. So we're talking about scraping data. We're talking about Department of Revenue getting more data. I'm somewhat concerned in the sense that I want to make sure that data is used for collection of this taxes and not going after other uses in the Department of Revenue. So if properties, land use laws, and so forth. I just want to know that this is. It's very narrow in scope and is meant for transient lodging taxes, I guess. Or is it the department's view, once we have data, then we can use it in different ways?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. So Typically, there are restrictions on how money can be used, lodging tax money in particular. So for right now, the Department of Revenue, for instance, on state lodging tax dollars, is only able to use our share of the administrative expense to enforce the state lodging tax. So we don't do any enforcement of the locals. If we were to get more information through this, you know, software, we would be able to use it to enforce local lodging administration if we were to take on local lodging administration, which there's another bill on after. But I cannot guarantee you that if we saw that there was somebody, for instance, who likely has a large income tax liability and they are, we're not seeing that income flow into Oregon, that we wouldn't use this information to enforce the income tax as well. When we look at audits, we'll sometimes look broadly. And right now, for instance, we sometimes will see things in income tax audits that will lead us to look at whether or not someone is paying on the lodging tax. So I don't think it is true that it would be completely siloed in that sense. We may use it to make sure that people are paying their overall tax liabilities.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I have a question. This would direct the department to do something. It takes some money to do that. How many cities are there in Oregon? I know the answer, but how many cities are there? How many of those cities have a transient lodging tax? And of those, how many would use this service? In other words, is it worth the investment?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, I think we're at about 115 cities of the 241 that have a lodging tax. And we have surveyed our cities in 2017 and again just in the last couple weeks. I've got about 30 that are ready to sign up like right away, and another 35 who are very interested.
Okay.
Like, you know, mm-hmm. very soon, and then even more after that. But it's the devil will be in the details of how much it costs and, you know, having these companion of making sure they feel confident that the state will be collecting mm-hmm. everything and having an auditor. Those kinds of things are will make it more enticing.
Thanks. But it sounds like there's already a critical mass of interest. Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for Mr. Garst. Organizational impacts and authorities. Currently, the Department of Revenue does not have authority to look at anything other than state mandated issues. But moreover, do you have, will buying this software and implementing this program require additional staff?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Finley. So the department is bringing forward a POP to get an auditor for our lodging tax program in particular. That's working its way through Ways and Means right now. And so we think that we will have the resource to use this software. And I don't want to jump the gun on bills that are coming up, but we're not doing local administration currently, but we actually have the authority to do local administration. The question is just getting the resource in place in order for us to do that. And there's a bill that will seek to address that as well.
Okay, thank you.
And for anyone listening who's not familiar with our jargon, a POP is a policy option package, which is a budget request.
I apologize.
Anything else on this bill, 3135, before I ask Mr. Malik, would you please tell us about 3136, not the background, because we're running low on time now. Just quickly what 3136 does.
The House Bill 3136 requires the Oregon Tourism Commission to primarily transfer money to the Department of Revenue in a form of a loan, and that loan is to help in basically developing the collection for local taxes, transient lodging taxes, and requires the department to start gathering those and sorting this information on local addresses, basically, rather than only regional. And it also puts a mechanism by which that amount of money of $900,000 to be repaid to the Tourism Commission
through the payments of the online vendors primarily, with that usually they would get an allowance for the collection of 5%. And until that is paid, that amount would be taken out of those allowance for collection.
Okay, thank you. Three more bills, 15 minutes. Let's make it happen.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, as Mr. Malik explained, all this bill does is figure out a mechanism to allow the department to do the collection. As we mentioned in 2017, you passed a bill that allows them to collect, but there's a small problem. The way the state is collecting, they collect and require taxpayers to file by region, and there are, I believe, 10 regions. And so you file for, you know, Multnomah County and Washington County, and you pay all your taxes in one big lump sum, but it's not divided out by city and county. And so the way the state is the filings couldn't be segregated. So we need to update the computer system and the forms and such so that the state can collect both the state tax and the local taxes at the same time on the same form. That comes at a price tag of about $900,000. And the cities and counties don't have the money to front that, and it will detract, frankly, from them signing up if the first ones have to pay for it. So we try to figure out, well, how do we pay for it? Well, the taxpayers who want this the most to have central filing are the intermediaries, because they have to file in all 115 cities and the other 15-ish counties. So what we're doing is something that's pretty, you know, not too painful, which is just simply saying you don't get to keep the 5% that you get to do now for the simple task of filing. Right now, intermediaries and other taxpayers get to keep 5% of their revenues. Until this $900,000 would be paid off, they wouldn't get to keep that 5%. Right now, it's just written as the state tax. They get 5%. That would be waived. We don't believe that's quite enough in a biennium to pay back the $900,000. So we would need an amendment to say all the local government taxes that the state collects, many of those also get a 5%. We would need to waive those as well. That will make the money come in quicker, because the state tax is only 1.8%, but many cities and counties are in the 8, 10, 15% range. So 5% of those revenues will bring in the money quicker to pay back the $900,000. So again, the amendments we would need would be to add in the local 5%, that would also be waived. And this is, the state part is on page 2, lines 2 and 3, where it says they may not withhold their 5%. We just need the same thing, that they may not withhold the local tax. Also, the Travel Oregon, the Tourism Commission, has asked that if we use this loan method, that they would like a 2% interest on it to make sure that they're made whole.
A processing fee?
Something like that. We did something similar with the marijuana and OLCC regulation. We did a loan. And then they would like it dispersed over, you know, the pain on the Travel Oregon budget to be dispersed in quarterly or some, so it's not held back all at once.
Did you have anything to add to this one?
For the record, again, Eric Kanzler, City of Bend. Madam Chair, the only thing that I would add is, although I did remark earlier that Bend is unlikely to use state collection, it's not out of the question. We're going to be looking at it, absolutely. And if it turns out to be very effective and very efficient, we may make a transition. I think it would depend on how it plays out, but we certainly do like that, the structure, the uniformity, and the improved data collection that comes with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel on this bill? Let's move to the next one, 3137.
3137 is a bill that primarily, I think, aligns or tries to solve a problem that the Department of Revenue have faced with the time when we changed the tax rate. And I think that they've discovered that there is a discrepancy between the payment patterns of the providers, or the collectors, and the filing process that they go through. And I think that's trying to align those times by making the payment due at the time of the termination of the stay or the rental.
Thank you.
Committee, all this bill does is say, makes it clear when the tax is due. Is it calculated based on when you book? So let's say you book a room in December, but it's for your stay in July. Is the tax calculated in December, or is it calculated in July when the tax rate may have changed and you may add another night and all that? You can guess where this is going. It should be calculated after you stay, not when you book the room. And that's the accrual accounting method. That's how most everyone does it. It just has never been clear in the statute. It could be interpreted either way. This would just make it very clear. It became a particular problem when the state did raise it from 1.5 to 1.8 because it became obvious that, oh, some folks weren't collecting it properly. Mm-hmm. And that happens at the local level too. So you'll see the same language about the tax imposed becomes due when the occupancy of lodging with respect to which the tax is imposed ends. You'll see it twice. That's in the state's part and the local part so that it's consistent. There is one requested amendment to this bill from Airbnb to have the effective date, which is Section 6, have it the traditional effective date, so January 1st, rather than 91 days. We agree that that will make it easier as a cutoff date, to be very clear. So we would seek an amendment to do that.
Okay. Any questions on this one? Yes, Representative Rushing.
So, Ms. Johnson, you said it's to clarify that the tax is calculated after you stay, not when you book. But there are some places where you can book and pay ahead of time, and the tax is taken. And then if I stay another night or I cut it short another night, how is that reconciled then?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Rushing, I think the plan is that from an accounting perspective, it's not really owed to the local government or the state until after the stay. If okay. You as the third party or the actual hotel collect that money, it'd be treated as in a suspense account kind of thing. It is owed, and there is, in fact, a statute that says that taxes are held in trust. Okay. So we would hope that it would be treated that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions on this bill? Let's hear about 3138.
3138 basically tries to align the language from the 30 days per year. This deals with new realities of how things are being rented and who reports to what. And I guess making that distinction seems to be a little bit not in connection with the way rentals are being done.
Okay.
It's not clear. Well, for an idea, I mean, you know, when the bill was passed, this was basically back in 2003. The minimum or the maximum was, you know, if you rent for more than 30 days per year, you're responsible for your taxes. If it's less, then that thing is not necessarily your obligation because it might be a small place, it might be a little house or part of a house or so on. Nowadays with the Airbnb and all the new technology of doing things, things are a little different, and it's not your small little owner or vendor who's doing it, but it's a whole platform that is doing it, and I think is trying to allow for that uniformity.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this bill changes one of the exemptions under the state provision, but most of our local governments adopt the state provision. So there's a list of facilities that are covered, and then there's a list of exemptions. And most of our cities and counties have chosen that same list. As Mr. Malik has explained, there's an exemption right now that says you're not required to pay taxes if you rent less than 30 days a year. When I've looked in the legislative history, it's because of the hunting cabin that's used a couple times a year by the unsophisticated taxpayer, that the legislature didn't want to put that person on the hook for having to even know that they needed to file taxes. The economy has changed so much since when the law was written. And by definition, an intermediary is not an unsophisticated taxpayer. And no intermediary wants to count, have you hit 30 yet, when they could be using Airbnb, VRBO, Flipkey, and Craigslist all of those entities want to, if they're going to collect the taxes, they want to collect the taxes from day one. They don't want to start and wait till you hit 30 or know whether they're supposed to. So all this would do is saying if you're an intermediary, you collect taxes from day one. There is no 30-day exception. As you can imagine, this is really important for the big events that happen once in a lifetime, the eclipse or whatever. We need Airbnb and VRBO and those folks to be paying those taxes. The unsophisticated person isn't going to know they're going to pay. It would still apply in that situation, but the intermediaries need to pay and the locals depend on that revenue for those huge events that happen infrequently. So that's all this bill would do. And many contracts, in fact, require that the tax would be collected from day one anyway. So this is actually helping the industry as well to be in compliance and not have liability for collecting a tax that isn't owed.
So this is related to how often or how often or how many days in use a particular facility is rented, not how long someone is staying
right
in the facility.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, correct. There's a tax owed if you rent at least 30 days a year. There's also a 30-day that it's treated like your rent. There's also no taxes owed, even if it's a hotel, if you stay more than 30 days. Those are two separate exceptions. This is only amending if you owe taxes as an entity.
Questions on this bill? Seems like the theme of this this last section of bills is, okay, the legislature had already adopted a policy of what should be taxed and how much the tax should be. It's about how do you collect it? A lot of technical stuff mm-hmm. about exactly what's owed, when it's owed, and how you go about accounting for it.
Yep.
Am I characterizing this package of bills correctly?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, yes, very much so. I did want to add one other thing. We have some communities who have said, you know, we want to keep it in-house for now, or interested. But you did pass a bill, and I believe you were the sponsor of it, House Bill 3180, that requires the Department of Revenue to share lodging tax information with locals and locals with the state. So even if a local decides not to have the state collect, the state can share the information it gets from the scraping from its collections and vice versa. So everyone will be benefited by this slate of bills, even if it's not done by the Department of Revenue.
Thank you. That's good to know also. We heard on several of the bills that there is an amendment that's needed. Mr. Malik, I assume that Legislative Revenue Office will be working to talk with the interested parties to develop the amendments that would be needed.
And Chair Nathanson, just to make it even more, some of the language in the bill might need further amendments. I mean, Section 3 in 3135, it's an appropriation language that probably better dealt with differently.
Yes, we heard that. On 3136.
Yeah, the appropriation process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then 3136, I mean, the loaning and repayment mechanism could probably be more simplified and made in a way that works better than rather than the way it is. So that probably something we would work with them on.
Mm-hmm. And on 3137, there's an issue of a date that looked like a more simple.
Right. That's an implementation date.
Item to address. It seems that there was consensus about that.
Okay.
Any other business related to these bills?
Good job.
And no one else is looking like they're eager to speak. I'm closing the public hearing now on 3135, 3136, 3137, 3138. There is no other business before us today. We're adjourned. So.